This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines: the chief of the Islamic Jihad resistance movement says Palestinians emerged victorious following Israel's recent aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip, thanks to their unity and sacrifice. The Syrian president Bashar al-Assad addresses the Arab League summit in Saudi Arabia, saying the occasion is a historic opportunity that could open a new phase in Arab cooperation. And Denmark announces a willingness to help train Ukrainian pilots on F-16 fighter jets after U.S. expresses support for the training. Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to World News. Chief of the Islamic Jihad resistance movement hails Palestinians' victory against Israel during the regime's recent aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip. Ziad al-Nakhala made the remarks in an event to commemorate the 33 Palestinians killed in Israeli attacks, including civilians and the movement's leaders. He said the regime was forced to accept Palestinians' terms for a ceasefire in the face of hundreds of rockets fired into occupied territories. Nakhala added the Palestinians dealt another blow to Israel's already tarnished image. The Palestinian official attributed the victory to Palestinian unity and sacrifice. Nakhala also thanked the countries that have supported the Palestinians, particularly Iran. He stressed the Palestinians are more determined than ever to defend their rights and liberate their land. Nakhala also vowed a strong and painful response to any future Israeli assassination of the group's commanders. Syria-based Palestinian factions have gathered in Damascus countryside to participate in an event following the victory of resistance groups in a recent battle with Israel in the besieged Gaza Strip. Our correspondent, Muhammad Ali, has your story.
The Islamic Jihad resistance movement has organized a celebration event in Damascus countryside, marking its victory against Israel in the recent battle in the Gaza Strip. In a televised speech, Secretary General of the movement, Ziad Nakhale, announced the victory against the Israeli regime, expressing pride in the people of Gaza, who he said manufactured their own weapons with the help of member countries of the resistance front.
We succeeded in the battle and we preserved Palestinians' unity. We proved to the enemy our continuous readiness to engage in battle after another in defense of our people. Any assassination operation will be met with a strong, clear and painful response in which Tel Aviv or other Israeli cities will be in the range of our rockets.
The event was attended by representatives of Syria-based Palestinian factions. Speakers said Palestinians and resistance groups showed unprecedented unity through the joint operations room while retaliating against Israel. They rejected any concessions with Israel and refused to acknowledge any political settlement with the enemy.
We underline the importance of national unity and armed resistance, which is the only option we have. We reject concessions, Oslo Accords, or any security coordination or recognition of Israel. We call for boycotting Israel politically and economically and punishing the enemy for the crimes against Palestinians.
Videos were played on a large screen showing the retaliatory battle codenamed Revenge of the Free, including images of the Islamic Jihad leaders who were assassinated or lost their lives while confronting Israeli attacks. Resistance movements like the Islamic Jihad believe that resistance is not an option, but in fact a national duty which is based on the legitimate right of Palestinians to fight against the Israeli regime. And for long, it has been the only successful deterrent against Israeli aggressions in occupied Palestine. Hamad Ali, Damascus countryside.
Syrian President Bashar al-Assad expressed hope the Arab League summit will pave the way for joint Arab action to achieve prosperity in the region rather than war and destruction.
There is an added hope amid the Arab as well as the Arab regional and international rapprochement brought in by this summit, which I hope will signal a new phase in Arab coordination and solidarity among us, and peace and prosperity in our region instead of war and destruction.
Assad described the bloc's 32nd summit hosted by Saudi Arabia as a historic opportunity to address crises throughout the region without foreign interference. It was the first time Assad addressed the organization since Syrian membership was suspended back in 2011 amid foreign-backed militancy to topple the Syrian government. Now, Syria returned to the Arab League earlier this month, and it followed normalization of ties between Syria and Arab countries, including Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. Countries' return to the Arab fold comes after Assad's government regained control of most areas seized by militants. Our Damascus correspondent walked us through some of the important comments made by the Syrian president during a speech at the Arab League summit.
Syrian President Bashar al-Assad highlighted the dangers surrounding some parts of the Arab world, and he underlined the importance of this Arab League summit and stressed that such a summit should discuss and solve some issues, mainly speaking about the crimes of the Israeli occupation, of course, over there on the Palestinians. Also, the dangers, as he described it, of the Turkish side in the Arab world. Especially here, he was definitely referring to the situation in Syria. We all know that there are still Turkish forces occupying parts of Syria in the north. He also spoke, President Assad, about the importance of addressing and solving the challenges of development in the Arab world, of course. He said that joint Arab action requires visions, strategies, and joint goals at the end of the day. President Assad and Syrian officials in general always stress the importance of joint Arab action. And previously, Foreign Minister Faisal al-Maqdad, in the past couple of 2 days, also underlined the importance of joint Arab action. And he also thanked Saudi Arabia for boosting that joint Arab action. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad had two separate meetings before the Arab League summit started this morning with his Tunisian counterpart and the UAE vice president. He shook hands before he entered that room with the Emir of Qatar, Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani. This is a significant, of course, development. He had a quick chat with him on the sideline. We all know that Qatar's position with regards to Syria, its policy is still more of a negative one, though it did, at the end of the day, accept and welcome Syria's return to the Arab League. President Bashar al-Assad also shook hands with the Egyptian president. It's a very important visit for the Syrian president in order to meet all of those Arab leaders that many of them cut ties with Syria previously in the past decade.
Now, Denmark says it will help train Ukrainian pilots to fly U.S.-made F-16 fighter jets. This comes after Washington gave a green light to the training. Denmark's defense minister said this will be part of a collective contribution to train the airmen. Earlier, U.S. President Joe Biden told G7 leaders Washington supports supplying advanced warplanes, including F-16s, to Kiev. The U.S. was previously opposed to the idea over its cost and the length of time it'll take to complete. Washington has also ruled out sending warplanes of its own to Ukraine. Pledge to provide fighter jet support to Kiev has been spearheaded by the United Kingdom and the Netherlands. Strained ties between Russia and the West over the Ukraine war once again take the spotlight. President Vladimir Putin's accused the West now of attempting to pit Russian ethnic groups against one another and try to partition the country. We've been discussing the issue earlier with our guests in our news review program.
News review, where we look deeper into some of the top stories of the day. On this segment of the program, the Russian president warns of a Western plot to break the country up into dozens of different states.
Practically the whole arsenal is aimed against us. Economic, military, political, and informational. Most powerful anti-Russian propaganda has been unfolded. The attacks on our history, culture, spiritual values are ongoing, as well as attempts to drive a wedge in the brotherhood and unity of the peoples of our country. They say Russia should be divided up into tens of small different states, and it's clear what this is for, to subdue to their will, to exploit and use in their interests.
Vladimir Putin added that the more sanctions the West imposes on Russia, the more cohesive Russian society becomes. Tensions between Russia and the West have hit decades-high levels over the war in Ukraine. Moscow says the war is aimed at demilitarizing and denazifying Ukraine, while Kiev's Western allies say it's an unprovoked land grab. The West has slapped unprecedented sanctions on Russia while providing financial and military aid to Ukraine, Moscow says the sanctions have failed to achieve their goal and warned that the increasing NATO involvement in the war could lead to a direct confrontation with Russia. And joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have Johnny Miller, who's joining us from Moscow. Also, we have researcher at Institute for Russian and Eurasian Studies, Mr. Greg Simons, who's joining us from Uppsala, Sweden. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Johnny Miller. Johnny, walk us through the recent comments made by the Russian president. He believes that there's a Western plot to break up the Russian Federation into dozens of different states.
Well, I think he's right in suggesting that that's certainly a desire of the West. I think this war in Ukraine has three elements. First of all, it's a civil war between Ukrainian nationalists and its Russian-speaking population, particularly in the south and in the east. Second of all, it's an attempt by Russia to secure, as it sees it, its geostrategic security, in particular Crimea, and they do want to take some land in order to achieve that aim and also to stop NATO expansion and demilitarization of Ukraine. And thirdly, it's an attempt by NATO countries, in particular the United States, to damage Russian power. And I think that's what Vladimir Putin is alluding to there. This war isn't really about Ukraine anymore. It's a war between NATO and the West, a war between the United States' attempts to retain its global hegemony and Russia's attempts to reassert itself in the world and, as they see it, to protect their own interests. So that's very much what the war in Ukraine has become about. And the fear is also that, I'm in Moscow at the moment, and there really is not much of a feeling that there is a war going on here. Russian society is carrying on as normal. The sanctions haven't really damaged Russian people too much. Russia has can mobilize a lot more of its manpower, a lot more of its economy, if it needs to, whereas Ukraine is really mobilizing its entirety of its ability. So the fear is also that this war between the West and the East may not stop with Ukraine. It may spread elsewhere.
Greg Simons, following up on the comments made by the Russian president, why would the United States and its allies benefit from a broken and fragmented Russia?
Well, it's always been along that this is a desire to break it up. I mean, they've even produced a map of how they would like to see it broken up. So, but the point is, Russia is a subject and not an object of international relations at the moment. They want Russia to be not even a vassal state, a client state, like it used to be under Yeltsin until the end. So they don't want independent foreign policy, independent politics. They want Russia to do their bidding. I mean, this is what the US has always wanted from other countries around the world. This is not about partnerships or symmetrical relations. It's always been about asymmetry with the US and their unipolar hegemony.
Greg Simons, staying with you, the Russian president once again warned that increasing NATO involvement in the war could lead to a direct confrontation with Russia as this war drags on. And NATO countries continue to pump more arms and ammunition into Ukraine. The prospect is still there that this could spill over or morph into something bigger and with it also result in a direct confrontation with Russia. Break that down for us, please.
Well, yes. I mean, there's always that issue, of course. From the comments and the analysis you're getting from Russia is much more, what do you say, sober and realistic than these kind of jingoistic slogans and catchphrases coming from the West. The West has been at the top for too long and show all the signs of being an empire in decline. And when an empire goes in decline, the first part of an empire that goes into decline are things like its intellectual capacity and its ethical standing. And you can see this in the West now. And so, yes, when you get things like this declining, this increases the possibility for something spreading. I mean, if we look at how World War I started, quite innocently, but it rapidly spread. the fact that this has not spread already much more than it has, I mean, it's no small miracle. And that's not owing to the West that uses Orwellian language about war for peace.
All right, thanks a lot, gentlemen. Johnny Miller joining us from Moscow, and Greg Simon speaking to us from Uppsala, Sweden. With that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the Newsery.
Welcome back, everyone. Now, the U.S. has imposed fresh sanctions targeting Iran and Russia as the two countries move to enhance relations. The State Department designated two Iranian shipping companies, a port operator and maritime service provider. It said that they were part of a logistics network between Moscow and Tehran. Now, relations have angered the West, and that includes a recent agreement between Iran and Russia for the construction of a railroad section that will connect southern Asia to northern Europe through Azerbaijan. U.S. says it is deeply concerned by any move that tries to curtail sanctions. Tehran has brushed aside the concerns, though, saying the Rasht Astara railroad project is part of its neighbor-oriented strategy based on cooperation for common security, development, and welfare. The European Union's refugee policy goes under the spotlight again in the European Parliament, being branded as illegal under international law and discriminatory. Refugees in Belgium claim those seeking asylum from Ukraine are receiving preferential treatment. Scuffles break out between demonstrators and police in Budapest as thousands of Hungarians rally against controversial reforms to how teachers work. The protesters chanted slogans and held signs denouncing the so-called status law. They also slammed what they're calling the use of excessive force by police against demonstrators. Status law eliminates the public servant status of teachers and increases their workload. Almost 5,000 teachers have already warned that they will quit if this bill comes into law. Hungary has seen a series of rallies and strikes for higher pay and better working conditions for teachers. This amid an inflation of around 24% that has eroded wages already below the national average. And that's it for your latest view, everyone. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. in the limelight.
New York Mayor Eric Adams, the highest profile black mayor in the country, has gotten so crossways with the White House that he was dropped from Biden's 2024 campaign advisory board before it was announced last week. The rebuke reflects a new low in relations between President Biden and the mayor, who was said to be a key surrogate for the campaign. They are fighting over immigration and crime, and Adams' willingness to publicly criticize the administration. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT noted the U.S. president has reportedly booted New York's Eric Adams from his re-election campaign team amid criticism over migrant surge. President Joe Biden has apparently had a falling out with the mayor of America's largest city, New York City's Eric Adams, because the fellow Democrat has been criticizing his administration's handling of an illegal immigration crisis. The conflict bubbled on recently when Adams was asked in a Good Day NY's television interview about the city's struggles to cope with a massive migrant influx. The mayor replied, "Where the heck is the President of the United States? That is a good question, and I think we all should be asking why this is happening to a city that was turning itself around and will continue to do so." A surge in illegal crossings of the U.S.-Mexico border to all-time highs began to hit home for New York last year when the governors of Texas and Florida began busing migrants to Democrat-controlled cities. This should not be happening to New York City, Chicago, Los Angeles, and other big northern cities, Adams said, adding, "And really, it should not be happening to El Paso or Brownsville, Texas. No city should be carrying this burden. This is a national problem and it needs a national solution." Feeling pressure from his own constituents, Adams has escalated his criticism of the Biden administration in recent weeks amid increasing struggles to accommodate the illegal aliens streaming into his city. Parents were up in arms over the city's plan to house hundreds of migrants in the school gymnasiums after running out of space elsewhere. Homeless veterans were reportedly kicked out of hotels in upstate New York, where they had been given temporary shelter to make room for illegal immigrants being bused from New York City. Adams was reportedly excluded from Biden's re-election campaign team to punish him for alleged disloyalty. The mayor had announced earlier this year that he would be serving on the campaign's National Leadership Advisory Team, but when the group's official membership list was released last week, Adams was left off. "This is a shot to the chops from the Biden team," political consultant Hank Shainkoff told New York Post, adding, "The message is, don't criticize an incumbent Democratic president and don't criticize the first black female vice president. any criticism from a Democrat heading into re-election is seen as a betrayal. Adams hasn't been alone in sounding the alarm over the immigration crisis. New York's governor, Katie Hochul, has asked Biden's administration for funding help and access to federal installations, such as military bases, to house illegal aliens. You're going to start seeing people living in tents, not just on the border, but in the streets of New York and across New York State, because we've reached a breaking point, she said recently in an MSNBC interview. The website of Axios also reported, this isn't merely personal. It's part of a potential crisis for the campaign. Many Democratic state and city officials quietly agree with Adams and are happy he is taking flak on their behalf. They're running out of patience with the U.S. administration, especially over what they see as a lack of financial support or imminent solutions for dealing with the massive migration across the southwest border. One senior official in a Democrat-led state said the White House has been too defensive toward Adams' critiques. Adams is right to be upset, and I think it's a massive mistake to be dismissive of him, the Democrat said. One person familiar with their relationship equated it to a fighting couple who don't want to hold hands in public. Adams has bluntly criticized the White House's handling of the recent surge of migrants crossing the U.S. border. Thousands of migrants, including many bussed in from border states by Republican governors, have arrived in New York City, which guarantees services to migrants that many other cities do not. The presidents at the White House have failed this city, Adams said in April, a line many Republicans and conservatives have used to attack the Biden administration. Migration is exacerbating a budget crunch in New York, affecting hotel vacancies and bringing unwelcome headlines for Adams. One New York Post headline last week from Orange County outside the city read, "Homeless vets are being booted from NY hotels to make room for migrants. The White House is limited in what it can do without backing from the divided Congress, and the administration has had little engagement with the GOP on immigration changes." Biden's incoming campaign manager, Julie Chavez Rodriguez, has been the White House's point person on the Adams relationship as it has deteriorated. She privately has fumed to her colleagues about Adams' stinging rhetoric and public critiques of the administration, according to people familiar with her comments. Presented with this reporting, a White House colleague said, "Of course, calls in which elects you admire criticize the administration can be frustrating, but she's a pro who always deals with it respectfully and constructively." Adams' bravado occasionally has frustrated White House aides. Even before he won the general election in New York in 2021, Adams declared himself the new face of the Democratic Party. One close Adams ally, Jeff Rhodes, recently told some Albany Democrats that Biden might replace Vice President Kamala Harris with Adams on 2024 ticket. Rhodes, who recently left his job as chief of staff to Adams' first deputy mayor, told Axios that he wasn't saying that the swap would happen, but said, "There were some thoughts about it." He declined to comment further. After Axios contacted the mayor's office about his quote, days later, Rhodes wrote to Axios, "I have no connection to the president's campaign, have no inside knowledge of their thinking, and the suggestion I would making those kinds of statements is absurd. A person familiar with the White House's thinking told Axios that no one except Harris has ever been considered for the vice presidential spot. In a statement, Adams Press Secretary Fabian Levy told Axios, "To be clear, no one here at City Hall or on the mayor's political operation has ever spoken about the mayor joining President Biden's ticket. There is no truth to that. If anyone said that, they would be speaking on their own with absolutely no authority or insight into what is happening." Top Democrats are trying to repair the Biden-Adams relationship, thinking that the mayor continuing to hammer Biden throughout the 2024 campaign would be a drag on the president and a boon to Republicans. Al Sharpton told Axios, "I'm trying to get them to sort it out. I would hope the White House sees the value of Eric, the mayor of the largest city, a black mayor, not all the way left, not all the way right." Sharpton added, noting that Adams also would benefit from a healthy White House relationship. Howard Wolfson, a top aide to former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, told Axios that both sides have a vested interest in resolving this. After the Biden campaign left him off their list of surrogates, Adams told reporters last week, "I don't know what their plans are, but let's be clear. Biden is my guy. I want Biden to be the next president, be re-elected." Biden campaign spokesperson Kevin Moniz told Axios, "President Biden counts Mayor Adams as a friend and partner. He looks forward to working with the mayor on issues impacting New Yorkers and to win the presidency again in 2024. One Adam administration official added, "The mayor compartmentalizes things, and that's what's going on here. He thinks the president is doing a really good job and will strongly support him in any way he can, but he is upset about the way he is handling the asylum seeker crisis." White House Deputy Press Secretary Andrew Bates told Axios, "President Biden and his team are proud of their collaborative relationship with Mayor and Julie appreciates their discussions on a wide range of issues."
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint. A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God. Welcome to another edition of the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah helping me in criticizing or the critique of such movies, Hollywood movies with religious theme, mostly. Well, assalamu alaikum, Brother Yasser, and welcome to the program.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. Always a pleasure, Brother Muhammad Jawad.
Thank you very much. And Sayyid Abdullah, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the program.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you guys for joining us. you know, we decided to criticize a new movie entitled Predestination. This is also, interestingly, produced in 2014, directed by Michael and Peter Spirek. Before we embark on the critique of this movie, let's take a listen to a trailer, a short part of this movie, and then we'll be back criticizing it. Stay with us. Don't go away.
What if I could put him in front of you? The man that ruined your life. If I could guarantee that you'd get away with it, would you kill him?
Many New Yorkers are leaving the city in fear of a fifth attack by the Fizzle Bomber.
Maybe he's doing the city a favor.
That kind of talk can get you in trouble.
The worst that I've already been through.
There's something this job has taught me. Is that truth is stranger than fiction.
You're not talking about bartending, are you?
I'm not talking about bartending.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio. We decided, as we earlier mentioned before the break, to criticize the movie Predestination, produced in 2014, directed by Michael and Peter Spirek. Well, the plot goes like this. As his last assignment, a temporal agent is tasked to travel back in time and prevent a bomb attack in New York in 1975. The hunt, however, turns out to be beyond the bounds of possibility. Well, Sayed Abdul, let me start with you. A couple of major actors and actresses, you know, featuring this movie, such as Ethan Hawke, Noah Taylor, Sarah Snook, and Eliza Jansen, you know, and IMDb gives it a relatively high figure, 7.4 out of 10. But Rotten Tomatoes gives it 84, which is basically 6.9 approving rate out of 10. And the box office is very low, $5 million, yeah. Right? And interestingly, the budget is hovering around the same figure, again, $5.4 million. Not much, very much. Well, how do you like the movie?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I personally loved the movie. Mm-hmm. And I loved it for one reason. Because I read the novel way before it came out. Actually, mm-hmm. It's not a novel. It's about 14 pages short novel written by Robert Heinlein in 1958, I think, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And the novel is called All of You Zombies. And it goes through that paradoxical, I'm not sure if they have mentioned...
Circle, yeah.
Yeah, if they mentioned that in the movie. But the movie is actually the exact story that written by Robert Heinlein, which is All of You Zombies. But they made it into a movie. So when
you
it came...
only 14 pages?
Yeah, it's
the shortest story.
Yeah, it's a very short story. He wrote the story
How could it be reflected?
He wrote the story in about one day. If you Google it, and it's not a very famous story, but it's a very
eccentric,
very powerful story. It's like it will twist your head. The way it was written is more powerful than the movie itself. Mm-hmm. So I do recommend you. It's for free online. So they took that movie and they took that story and turned it into a movie, mm-hmm. which I was very excited to see, to see how would they play it, you know, see how are they going to go around trying to solve the paradox itself, which mm-hmm. which they never do anyway.
Yeah.
So I, from that aspect, because I had the knowledge prior to the movie itself,
right.
I was very eager and I enjoyed it because now I can visualize what I read. So from that aspect, actually, it was good for me. I liked it.
Yeah, thank you very much, Sayed Abdullah. Let's take a listen to a short part of the movie Predestination, produced in 2014, directed by Michael and Peter Spirek, and then we'll be back with his critique. Don't go away.
Don't worry, sweetheart. We'll take good care of you now.
I was just one of a dozen babies who had no past. But that was all we had in common.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio. With me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program. And Sayed Abdullah and Brother Yasser are helping me criticize this movie. This movie is produced in 2014, Predestination, directed by Michael and Peter Spirek. Well, Brother Yasser, I'm going to ask you a question quite apart from its title. Well, you see relatively at the early part of this movie that somebody leaves a baby at the door of an orphanage, right? This is very cruel and sad for today's world. Why such phenomena happen in modern world against or despite all the human rights, all the claims that are there? And also we tend to care for animals, but yet you see modern mankind actually leaves their babies somewhere else, and they don't want to raise them. If they don't want to have the babies, why the hassle?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The hassle is not the baby, it's the part before it. That I need to find pleasure, and this is how human beings get pleasure. So one of the ways that human beings within their own creation has this desire for the opposite gender, and this is how they attain pleasure. So that is the issue of it. Now, that is also the cause of a pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? A lady may get pregnant from this particular act, and she does not want the child. Why? Because the husband is not there. As we saw in the movie, the man is not in the picture, but obviously we find out later why not. But this is one of the reasons why. For example, recently there was statistics where in the United States and even in other more European countries that the rate of children who do not know who their fathers are is extremely high.
Ah, yeah.
Extremely high.
That's why I asked this question.
Yeah, I mean, like, more than half of children born do not know who their parents are. Yeah. I mean, especially the father.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because at the end of the day, it's the mother who's going to go through the pain and the pregnancy, the giving birth of the child, the pain that goes with it.
Yes.
And so on and so forth. And then obviously that 9 months already with the child has already created a bond with their child. And the mother will find it difficult to actually break that bond. But in this movie, for example, we see that the child was stolen and so on and so forth. So that doesn't give that angle of, doesn't show it that, yes, okay, there's a lot of children who are born without parents, but still the mother, as we see, especially in certain cultures in America, unfortunately, because of some other bad kind of developments or ethical or moral corruption because of other reasons as well. But again, it's a whole kind of chain of results. And even in that particular ethnocentric group, the mother is still a very respected figure, even though she's alone.
Yes.
She will not just go and give the child to an orphanage. Mm-hmm. We see it very rarely in this ethnocentric group. But in another one, for example, we see that maybe because of social status, maybe because now because we see the abortion law in America, it's just this.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I don't want the child. I might as well. Keep.
Yeah.
In those days, because we see the movie was in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
That particular scene was in the 80s.
Yeah.
Abortion was illegal. So therefore, to do abortion was illegal. So I don't want it. I couldn't kill it. Na'udhubillah. I had to do something with it. I don't want to take care of it. So I just give it and leave it at the door of an orphanage.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, again, like I said, there are other reasons why. But the bigger reason is a hassle. For a dog, I just have to buy food.
Yeah.
If I don't like it, I can kick it. But now, unfortunately, if you kick it and put it on YouTube, people get hold of it and they criticize you. But I can do that if I do it in my own home. But if it's a child, I beat up the child, social services. I've got the child, I have to educate this child. I have to clothe the child, feed them. So many
problems.
Bring up this child, give it moral demeanor and characteristics and so on and so forth. So again, it's more difficult than an animal.
True indeed. Thank you very much. Let's take a break by listening to another part, the movie Predestination, produced in 2014, directed by Michael and Peter Spirek, and we'll be back.
When I got older, I realized I stood little chance of getting married for the same reason I hadn't been adopted. I was different. A freak, a goddamn loser. I stopped looking in the mirror. I hated what I saw.
I have no photos of myself as a young girl. I don't even remember what I looked like. Just more of a feeling now.
Back to the program. Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio. we are criticizing the movie Predestination, produced in 2014, directed by Michael and Peter Spirek. Said Abdullah, you know, in a part of this movie, or maybe even two parts, Sarah Snook, the lady, talks about her childhood and youth as an orphan without any hope for her future. People look at them as different from other so-called normal people. They call them freaks. What do you suggest or recommend to those hopeless individuals? What does religion have to say to those people? Especially, I'm talking about like orphans, those babies, those children who are left without their parents. Like sometimes the parents actually leave them here and there, you know. I'm talking about those people who think they have no future.
Okay, so first of all, when it comes to orphan, Islam emphasizes so much on taking care of them, providing for them. Sometimes it could be even wajib to take care of an orphan.
Right.
And their money is preserved. You cannot touch their money. And so Islam puts so much rules and regulation and emphasis on taking care of the orphans. This is when it comes to the people who are, you know, who can do something about it. As for the orphans themselves, we sometimes find that the greatest human beings that ever walked the face of the planet were orphans.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to give you examples more than the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi.
Right.
He himself was an orphan. He was born without a father. His mom died at 7. He was an orphan. But look at him. He changed the course of mankind until the day of judgment.
Mm-hmm.
So being an orphan is not a stigma. It's not a disease. It's not a taboo. It just means that your father or your mother or both parents have passed away. It has nothing to do with your abilities to change the world, to become creative, to do things. And even like if you look at modern scientists, most of them are orphans.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So being an orphan does not limit your ability, does not put you in a state of hopelessness. Rather, actually, I find it out the contrary. Those who don't have parents, who are orphaned technically, are the ones who are more hardworking, more persevering, more creative. They do more work. Why? Because they don't have the essential commodities that me and you have, the luxuries that me and you indulge in. So he's constantly trying to make something better for himself, and that makes him succeed and excel in every field that he touches.
Mm-hmm.
While me, I'll just spend my time sitting on the couch watching TV because I had the luxuries. Well, he will exceed me. So actually, it's not a point of despair for them, rather a point of
development
and encouragement. And like I said, take the Prophet as example.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, for your nice contribution to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critic program on RIB English Radio. Unfortunately, because of shortage of time, we haven't succeeded in criticizing the whole movie of Predestination, produced in 2014, and hopefully we'll do that in the upcoming episode. Thank you for joining us. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
10, 9.
I always
8,
knew something was different 7, about me.
6.
You're a gift given to the world through a predestination paradox. You're the only one.
You're gonna save millions of lives.
You must complete your mission. You must lay the seeds for the future.
Here you are, at the beginning of your new life.
I know where I come from. Where do all you zombies come from?
You're here to create history and influence what is to come.
Time catches up with us all. The path you're on will take you to your destination. We'll be right back.
follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
The Limelight.
British households are facing an unprecedented surge in food prices amid persistently high inflation, according to the latest data released by the British Retail Consortium, BRC. The trade body representing UK supermarkets revealed recently that fresh food prices rose by 17.8% in April compared to the previous year, while prices for canned goods and other pantry items increased by 12.9%. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Bloomberg noted rising grocery prices in the UK have replaced energy as the main inflationary concern for the Bank of England, BOE. Bloomberg reported after the bank made the 12th consecutive hike to the base interest rate. Although energy prices have slightly declined, British families are facing a tight squeeze on their finances due to double-digit inflation. Low- and middle-income families are being hit the hardest, given that they spend the bulk of their income on essentials and are now seeing a dramatic increase in their shopping bills. Food inflation has been particularly high, reaching 19.1% in March, according to the BOE. Over the past year, grocery price growth in the UK has been at its highest level since records began. It has now replaced energy costs as the most important financial issue for the public, the Bloomberg article states. Bank of England Governor Andrew Bailey told reporters recently, "We are acutely aware of how difficult this rise in food prices is for people, especially for those on lower incomes." He said he expects food price inflation to start slowing down soon, but admits that it is taking longer than we previously thought. Meanwhile, economists say it has become difficult to gauge where prices will go at a time of major supply disruptions caused by the Russia-Ukraine crisis in today's modern, interconnected world. This has meant the BOE lacks past experience for making food price forecasts, according to Bloomberg. The BOE's recent monetary policy report said the sustained higher price level represents a long-term cost for households and businesses, and this is one driver of subdued economic activity over the forecast horizon. According to Bloomberg, even with lower energy costs, it will take time for food producers such as farmers, who often buy key supplies like fertilizers in advance, to adjust prices and make their goods more affordable to consumers. Meanwhile, RT noted British households have been hit with a record jump in food prices as decades high inflation continues to cripple the economy, according to the latest figures from the British Retail Consortium, BRC. A report by the trade body, which represents UK supermarkets, showed recently that fresh food prices soared by 17.8% in April on an annual basis, while prices for tinned goods and other stores covered items accelerated by 12.9%. According to BRC Nielsen IQ Shop Price Index, prices were up 8.8% last month compared to the same period in the previous year, while slightly down from 8.9% in March. BRC Chief Executive Helen Dickinson was quoted as saying by Sky News, "Overall shop price inflation eased slightly in April due to heavy spring discounting in clothing, footwear and furniture. However, food prices remained elevated given ongoing cost pressures throughout the supply chain," she added. Dickinson indicated that some goods, such as ready meals, have been seeing price rises due to knock-on effect from increased production and packaging costs. Meanwhile, head of retail and business insight at Nielsen IQ, Mike Watkins, noted that with inflation yet to peak and sales volumes mostly in decline, it's difficult to second guess the strength of consumer confidence. Official figures showed last month that the rate of inflation in Britain had eased slightly, but it still remains above 10%, with food costs at a 45-year high. According to Trussell Trust charity, almost 3 million emergency food parcels have been handed out at UK food banks in the past year, with the number provided for children topping 1 million for the first time. The Bank of England's chief economist, Hugh Peel, stated earlier that British households and businesses needed to accept that they are poorer and should stop asking for wage increases and pushing prices higher.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.